You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Black Business of Broadway, a podcast brought to you by the Broadway League and Black to Broadway. Here, we highlight the stories, how-tos, and successes of the Black professionals and legends of Broadway. I'm your host, Janine Scott. Justin!
Yes, yes.
It's been a year. Oh my gosh, we made it. I'm so grateful to have you as our audio engineer and moreover as my friend. We've had some moments this year. We've had some moments where, you know, we've gotten really real and, you know, we've gotten emotional and we've also had some very silly moments.
Yeah.
You know, but at the end of the day, it was nice because we got to celebrate and highlight the Black excellence that is working on Broadway. But, you know, we've only just begun.
Wow. That's amazing. Look, let me just say thank you for having me on board. It's been a blast so far, and I can't wait to see where we go.
Yes!
You know, it's yeah. So with all that being said, let's just hop right into it. Why was this podcast started?
It really did start with, okay, what are we going to do for Black History Month? And from there, it was, we need to celebrate year round. It's not just about one month and doing something one time, because we had done the Juneteenth event. It's like, what can we do that's ongoing, that's going to really celebrate the Black folks on Broadway? And how do we highlight the careers and that are out there that many of us don't know? And not just the folks in New York and in the tri-state area, but across the globe, because Black people really are everywhere.
And we are.
And, you know, it's... I didn't know about arts administration jobs. I went to school to be a teacher. And I fell into this career. And so many of us kind of fall into this career without even knowing. And that's a problem, because just think, I mean, granted, you know, I'm what, like in year 15 of this arts admin game?
Wow.
Or somewhere close to 15. But I could be so much further in, you know, had I known about this as a career. But, you know, so I feel like it's my responsibility to share that there are jobs out here, and that if you have a passion and a love for the arts, I mean, and even if you can't, you know, seeing dance, you know, or anything like that, do anything on stage, there's still a place.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
That's a great answer. And I mean, one of the things I've been teaching my collegiate class over the past few weeks is African Americans and how they created and used their creativity after the emancipation. And one of the ways that they did that after the emancipation was they were only allowed to perform blackface.
Right.
And we Be black and perform blackface. And we all should know the history of blackface and vaudeville performance. And while it was something that was very derogatory and very demeaning for our people, that was like one of the only jobs that they could actually be successful in. Performance wise, not like farming or agriculture, but that, you know, was what they had to do. And it was like a mockery of who we are as a people. But now we've moved to being able to not only just act in the shows, but we don't have to, you know, be derogatory. We don't have to be demeaning to ourselves. And we actually are producing the shows, and we're actually,
yeah,
you know, in the background, as you said, press agents, everything that it takes to put on a successful show, we are there. And I think it's important for, like you just said, people to see that, because they just assume that we can just sing and dance.
Right.
But there's so much more to the creative process and having, you know, a successful product. And so, and even in the age of technology, you know, my nephew, who is 5 or 6 now, will have access to seeing this podcast. You know, your daughter, being a teenager, they all have access to see and hear from these people via your podcast. That's how history, you know, continues to be upheld. This is an important piece of history. So you're absolutely spot on with all of this Black excellence.
The stories are universal.
It's education.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but the other part is, it's good for other folks to see us in those spaces, because then we start to normalize it. And we start to remove those unconscious biases at play. So it's like, when you say director, you could think of Kenny Leon.
Yeah.
You know? You don't necessarily have to, you know, think of a white director.
Yes.
When you say producer, you could think of Ryan Moreland.
Yes.
You know? And you don't have to think of, you know, a white producer. So we really are starting to, you know, to normalize.
Yes.
Seeing us in those spaces. And so I like that too.
That, listen, we literally just talked about that in my lecture this morning. I was connecting, like, going back to blackface and connecting violence against African American people via white mobs in the 1890s. You know, I said, had the image of African Americans during that time been portrayed a little bit differently, they would be treated differently. But because the pop culture image was, they are stupid, all they like is watermelon, all they like is chicken, they can't speak well, they are not eloquent. And so you put this image in pop culture, and people, just like you said, have this unconscious bias, like, oh, okay. And so it just creates an atmosphere for a certain type of treatment, just like objectifying a woman during the rap era in, like, the early, you know, the late 90s into the, and, you know, I mean, the late 80s into the 90s, you know. And one of my friends was like, yeah, in 2000s, yeah, we, you know. And one of the students in the class was like, well, you know, everybody has the right to make their own decision. I said, they do. I said, but they also make informed decisions by what they see and by what they hear. And so you're absolutely right. Putting this on display is also a form of education. Like, yes, we are in these spaces, and we can create in these spaces, and we can create successfully in these spaces.
In these places. Exactly. You know, so. Exactly.
What are some of your favorite moments from this past year?
Oh my God. Some of my favorite moments didn't even make it to the air. because the conversation often goes on after the episode.
Yeah.
Or sometimes we start talking before we hit record.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, just because of time, you know, things get, you know, cut out. So, but some of my favorite moments are, I'm gonna go with some of the ones that have actually kind of, you know, made it to air. But I love how candid and how heartfelt our guests all speak. Like, they literally speak from the heart, and you can tell, and I can tell the moment that they get comfortable and they start flowing, and it's like, yeah, okay, we're in this groove, and it really starts to feel like it's just, you know, it's just all of us just vibing, right?
you meet other black people, right?
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Okay, so here's a classic scenario. You're in a cast. Somebody gets on the piano and starts playing something. Now you could be Kojic, you could be Baptist, you could be Pentecostal, you could be something else, whatever, Southern, whatever, whatever. Now you all know the song. You may not know it the same way, but you all know the song. Then
That's somebody
makes a joke about a deacon, and you all start laughing. And the white folks look at you and go, "Did you all?" They ask that question. It's not mean, but they all go, "Did you all go to the same church?" You go, "No, but we all had the same experiences."
One of my favorite moments is, and it's when Ray said, "You know, do it scared."
My grandmother used to always say, "If you can't beat fear, you have to do it scared." You know, and if you can't beat it, and I just carried that in my pocket all my life. If you can't beat fear, do it scared.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, it's so simple.
Yeah, it's so simple.
But it so resonated with me, like no other. And one of the early episodes, I want to say it was like maybe episode 1 or 2, when we were talking about not being new to theater and how, you know, we had Easter speeches and things like that. And I don't know if all of that made it in or not, because it was it ended up being a really long interview. And we had to trim. But when we talk about us not being new to theater.
People of color, or black people specifically, have been attending theatrical events their entire lives.
Absolutely.
Whether they begin Absolutely. In the church with a church performance, or they go to their local community center, mm-hmm. or whatever local community event might be, it is a theatrical event. If they go to a concert, it is a theatrical event. They may not have come to Broadway just yet, but they are already in the theatrical setting, which is a part of our audience.
And I think that episode was with Brian Moreland and Aletha Stevens, when we talk about not being new to theater. And then we had that same conversation again with BTC. And it was, again, we're not new. I think Nick said, even if you flip on the light switch, you've done lighting design. You did it on your cue. I mean, obviously, there's more to it.
Right.
But I was just like, yes, we are not new.
My work and my career has been about platforming myself so that I can have those conversations, and now sharing that knowledge with others to be like, don't diminish the work that you've done. Don't diminish that play you did in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Don't
That's
diminish
right.
that show that you did when you were at the church, because yes, you were the lighting designer. Mm-hmm. Just because it was the pastor being like, hey, go flip that switch on this word. That's lighting design.
Uh-huh. That's right.
you need to put it. Now there are more pieces involved. Like, it gets more complex as you go on. But I'm like, don't diminish the things that you have done, because that is how they keep us down. That's how they keep us out of spaces, is by mm-hmm. saying we don't actually have experience there. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, I haven't been given the chance to get the experience mm-hmm. that you're seeking, mm-hmm. but here's what I have done. And that training mm-hmm. counts as well.
And another moment is with James Monroe Iglehart. That conversation went, I think after we trimmed it, it ended up being like an hour. But
yeah,
I kid you not, that conversation was probably almost 90 minutes, because we started talking, and we were talking about how when we all see each other as black folks,
yeah,
and we get together and we just have this universal understanding,
yeah,
and then we started talking about church.
Yeah,
I don't even know if all of that stuff made it in or not, but it just, we just went there, and about how, you know, your church clothes, your good clothes, and we talked about how we pass generational things, how we pass things down.
Yeah.
And for fear of not wanting our children to suffer the same way we did, or I'm going to get you before the world gets you type of mentality, and how we as a people have started to kind of shift that and change that. And
think about what it was like when you were a kid.
Right.
You know, think about that church person that said that mean thing to you that you still mm-hmm. remember, mm-hmm. that is still inside you, that you wish you could have said something, but your mama told you you couldn't because you wasn't old enough. And now mm-hmm. don't treat kids like that, because they may have the same scars you do.
Exactly.
So I've always tried to grow up and not old.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about getting spankings and everything. I mean, we were all off, but... But it was such an amazing moment. And, you know, and even recently when Jenny said, and I don't know, and again, I don't know if this was after the recording or during the recording, but when we were when we were talking, and she was just like, she's mindful of the words she uses in mixed company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially for me, my boundary is Black women and Black mothers. As much as some people may drive me up the wall, there's a certain limit. I limit what I allow to come out of my mouth about, mm-hmm. you know, our mm-hmm. counterparts. And especially in mixed company.
Yes.
That's a big one for me. Like, we in mixed company, I don't know your intentions. I don't know your perspective. I don't know your views. But I sure feel as hell, no matter how much this person may drive me up a wall, I'm not going to come together with you and exchange, you know, yes. upsets and exasperations.
And it's so true.
Yes.
It's so true because you never know.
You never know.
When someone's going to use that and weaponize it. And we are stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like, you know, Black folks, but us Black and brown folks, we're stronger together. And I feel like sometimes we get pitted against each other, and it's like, oh, well, what about this? And what about that? What about, and it's like, no, dude, we are all in this same boat together.
All in it together.
Our boats may look different, but we all in the same storm. How about that?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
We're all in the same storm. You know, some boats may look a little bit better and be a little bit more sturdier than others, but we're all weathering the lack of equity. We're all weathering the microaggressions, the unconscious biases, the lack of representation.
Yeah,
we're all going through that together, and we're stronger, I think, together, and because we have each other. But Brian said something also, and he said something about Brian and Rashad actually said very similar things about not discounting, you know, those white allies.
Right. Right.
I want to just encourage everyone to, yes, find your community, and God willing, you'll find a few people in that community that look like you. But if they don't be afraid to have allies there to support you.
And recognizing that, you know, we do have white allies, and there are some individuals who are helping to look out for us, because let's be clear, historically we don't own those space. We haven't owned those spaces, so
no,
someone had to let us in.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some of my. So what about you? I mean, you're there too. I mean, you know, what about you? And obviously, when you know you joined us, that's one of the best moments.
Oh, you know, I think it's like you said, the conversations that happen either before or after. And really, for me, a lot of my favorite moments are just to see the joy that is in the room.
Whenever I'm at my lowest, or I text WTF.
It's like sister friends unite.
They're like, all right,
activate.
It's like the assemble. Wonder Power.
Exactly.
Avengers. Exactly. Assemble. Let's do this.
Exactly. Diversity warriors.
Yes.
Seeing the joy across all persons who are on the call, and even for those persons that you don't know personally, we're all connected. You know, we're all connected. And so to see that connection happen right away, it's not, you know, from what I see, it's not Janine, the chief diversity officer, and Jenny, the actress, you know, mm-hmm. on Broadway. It's just two sisters just talking. Or when you have mm-hmm. a male guest on, his brothers or cousin, and it's just like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, kinfolk, you know, and it's that does good for me to be able to see that, because in those types of relationships and connections, I can just see that amongst us, now this is not always, but amongst us, there can be, and there always is the potential to be, a great sense of safety. And
yes,
that's needed, you know? I always feel like we as African Americans don't necessarily have a safe place to lay our head, you know, to really feel that, you know, where we can just
that exhale.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Whitney.
But, you know, I see that with a lot of the guests in the guests, like you said, like I said, that you may not even have a personal relationship with. When you start talking and you start connecting like that, all of those airs, all of that anxiety, whatever you face, it just goes away. And so seeing that happen on the podcast is like some of my favorite moments, because it just, you know, community is there, and community for us is important, you know, to be a people that have always been like historically pitted against each other or taken away from our sense of community. Having that is extremely, extremely important.
So that's another thing I really want to say. When you have these connections, or you don't just have, you have to, it's like a plant. You nourish them. Mm-hmm. Call them, say, how they doing? And another thing I never told, we don't get a chance to talk to each other because we're all, I love that fact, you and listening, like you have three people that all you young ladies are working together, you know?
Yeah.
Because people have to know that you cannot do it alone.
Correct.
You cannot do it alone, and you don't have to.
Yeah.
That's what you say. I need something, because people will help you.
And so those are some of my greatest moments. And then, you know, that's when the magic happens. That's when the conversation is free flowing. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of whatever. You know, it's just great.
Yeah,
it's just great.
Yeah, the laughter and the And just some of like the words that we use, it's like we get it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, and we didn't grow up in the same era, or you know, in the same area or era, and yet there's, like you said, that community, that understanding that we just have.
Yeah.
You know, and that whole there can only be just one.
Exactly.
It's kind of thrown to the side and that's good.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So as we round out this conversation, what are you looking forward to in year two?
Jeez, you know, there are so many areas that we have yet to explore that I can't wait to explore. If I had one wish, and this isn't even like a career thing, but if I had one wish, I would have the EGOT winner, Viola Davis.
Viola's
on
people.
The podcast.
I hope you all are listening.
Oh my gosh. Listen. When she won, although I couldn't see it because it wasn't televised, I watched, you know, the YouTube thing of hearing her. And it's funny, as soon as her book came out, I I downloaded it. I listened to it on the train coming and going, and then it got beyond listening to it on the train. I was just at home listening to it because it is so freaking good. Oh my God. Okay. I was like, oh, she's getting a Grammy.
Yeah.
She's getting a Grammy. And I told everyone that. So then when she got it, I was like, see, I told you.
You prophesied that.
I prophesied it. I knew she was getting it.
Yeah.
Knew it. I mean, it is, and if you have not, you've got to. But her story, and oh my gosh. But her story reminds me, she was born on a plantation. Mm. Viola was born on a plantation.
Wow.
And she ain't, and my mama older than her.
And that's something.
So we are not so far removed. And she explores the complex relationship that we have with this country, within ourselves as a people, and within this industry, because she, I mean, hello.
Yeah.
King Headley. I mean, like, yeah. Hello, you know,
yes.
Fences, everything, right?
Right.
And she explores all these things. And I remember listening, and I bawled. I was like, there were moments in the book that I'm crying, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, because I think so many of us have stories similar, maybe not exactly like Viola's, but similar to Viola's story. And especially as we navigate in these spaces, in this yeah. industry. I mean, even Billy Porter's story, for that matter. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I guess I love to have Billy Porter too. But
yeah.
Oh,
say
yes.
It out loud. Say it out loud.
But yes. I mean, just, but you know, I digress. I mean, when I, looking forward, I would love to see, I want to see some more of our living legends like Irene and Donna and Colleen. And I want to see some of our new and upcoming, some of our young people, the young people like Walter Russell III and some of those other ones who are up and coming. Walter just won a Grammy at the Met Opera for Fire Shut Up in My Bones. So yeah, it would just, some of the younger ones, the up and coming individuals, some of those people who just graduated from college who are trying to find their way, that would be great. And then some of our living legends like Viola,
yeah,
Leslie Uggams, you know, the list goes on. Loretta Devine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just LaShawn's, you know.
There are two people I want to hear you have a conversation with. One is Madame Felicia Rashad.
Oh, yes. Oh, of course.
Would
yes.
love to hear you talk to Felicia Rashad and Cheryl Lee Ralph. I think those would yes. be great conversations. So.
Oh, and how could I forget my idol? Like, the reason I even got started in the arts, Debbie freaking Allen.
There you go. Maybe we can have a sisters episode and have Felicia and Debbie on at the same time.
She is literally, I was a toddler, and mm-hmm. obviously I don't really recall this. This is my mother speaking through me. I saw Fame.
Okay.
I wanted to dance. And then growing up, I watched Fame, and like, I have Debbie, I have like four different things of Debbie Allen that I had to like buy. And I hope it really is her signature because it says it was authenticated, but you know, anyway, in my house,
yeah,
because I love her so, and that is how I got started dancing, and through dance is how I fell into this career. And so I really do owe it all. I owe it to her. So.
Well,
and she's
it.
Everything, director, choreographer, you name it, producer, mm-hmm. dancer.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
All that black excellence.
All that black excellence. And my daughter loves Felicia Rashad. We saw her walking with Lady Irene Gandy at the Tonys. I mean, I love Felicia Rashad too, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But we saw her walking, and she walked by us, and my daughter was like, oh, my God. I want to be like her when I grow up. She is so elegant. And I was like, this is a 12-year-old talking. Well, was she 13? 13-year-old talking. Mm. And she could just see it. You know, she grew up on a Cosby show. She's just looking at this woman's stance and her presence and the way she speaks. I was like, yes, yeah. Baby, be like her.
Yeah, yeah, be like her.
Be like her.
Yeah. Be like her. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. It's been a great year. This is great.
What are you, based off of everything that we've done this year and going into year two, and you know how we always ask our guests, you know, what piece of advice that was given, if any, kind of like struck you?
It goes back to Ray Mercer and really just doing it scared, you know?
Yeah.
Just, I don't want to use the Nike phrasing, but really you just have to do it. Like, you won't know until you do it. And then when you do know after doing it, then make the decision. But don't let fear stop you from doing. And you said something too about trailblazing. One of my friends said to me, what I'm doing, and she was speaking to me, she said, what you are doing, she said, trailblazing is, it's harsh, it's confusing, and it's scary, because you literally are walking where no other person has walked. You are creating the trail, so you don't have nothing to go off of. So you're literally creating the trail. And she said, you won't know how well you did until you've reached a point where you don't have to walk anymore and you can turn around and see who is behind you. And then you'll know.
Then you'll know. I love it.
Then you'll know.
I love it. Yes, yes. I want to thank our guest and you, our listeners. You could have been doing anything else, but you chose to spend your time with me, and I am grateful. Be sure to subscribe at bpn.fm/BBB so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, tell a friend. I'm your host, Janine Scott, and we at the Broadway League hope you enjoyed this episode of The Black Business of Broadway.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.